You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. I'm your host, Lucas Hand. Today is Friday, September 15th, 2017, and I have good news. This is our last, quote-unquote, off-season podcast. Starting next Monday, we are officially, even though the Clippers are not in their preseason yet, for our purposes here at the Locked On Clippers podcast, we will be in our season, really starting to ramp up our coverage and prepare for the 2017-18 regular season, which means more episodes, more analysis, all of the good stuff that I know you people enjoy. I know we've only been having one episode a week for like the last 6 weeks, and I know that that's not ideal, but like I said, there isn't always, you know, a lot of stuff to talk about, and I would rather do one episode a week where I feel like I'm doing one good episode than filling space all week. But next week, we're going to actually have stuff to talk about. We'll be getting seriously into player previews, breaking down a different player from the Clippers roster every day. It's running alongside a series on ClipsNation.com where my wonderful staff of writers are taking turns breaking down the players one by one in posts. And I'm actually not writing any of those, at least as of the current schedule, I'm not writing any of those. So it's a good opportunity maybe to get different takes on a player. So you can go see what one of the Clips Nation writers thinks about Wesley Johnson, and then on the podcast, I'll talk about what I think, you know, not necessarily just echoing them, but giving my own take. But so that's the good news. We're starting with a little more in-depth coverage, getting ready to, you know, kick off the season starting next week. So this is going to be our last sort of off-season podcast, and we're going to do what we've been doing. We're going to jump around between a few different topics and basically just have a good time in our last podcast of the summer portion of the NBA schedule. So let's get started. Okay, so this is a cool tidbit that I found on the internet the other day. So, you know, everyone is doing their NBA rankings right now. Sports Illustrated is doing it. ESPN is doing it. I think CBS Sports does one, although it might not be out yet, where basically they have all their writers fill out a poll and then they average all the results and they rank like the 100 best NBA players from number 1 through number 100. And, you know, it is what it is for, you know, the purposes that it's used for. It's fine. It's obviously not like some definitive amazing list, but, you know, whatever. I tend to not really pay too much attention to it. But there is one relatively new outlet called NBA Math, and they do a lot of interesting stuff with formulas and rankings and stuff, and they've been doing basically their version of rankings, but instead of listing 1 through 100 NBA players, they've been going team by team and listing basically 15 through 1 about who is going to be most effective for a given team. And so I went through the Clippers list and, you know, I read it, and some of the stuff was good and some of the stuff I disagreed with, but they approach a lot of things from a really analytical perspective. And they have this metric that they use called total points added, where they calculate on the offensive end how many points a player contributes to their team over the course of a season, and on the defensive end how many points a player either saves or costs their team, depending on how good or bad their defense is. And what they noted that was really interesting to me is that they calculated all of these total points added results for college players for every season from 2011 through 2017, last season. And according to this metric, which actually, yeah, I'm not a huge advanced metric person because I feel like, you know, you put formulas into stuff and you kind of make it more subjective. But Sindarius Thornwell, by this measurement, which is one of the ones I prefer of the advanced statistics, was the best player in college basketball last season. And not only that, but of all of the seasons that they measured going back to 2011, he had the 7th best individual season of anyone. Now, Anthony Davis blew everyone out of the water. He was in first place by like 60 points, which is ridiculous. But I mean, ridiculous in the sense that he's dominant, not that the number is flawed, because Anthony Davis really was that dominant. But so it's really cool, I think, that Sindarius was all the way up there. And it's not necessarily indicative that he's going to be an NBA star. I mean, you've got other guys like DeLon Wright is actually ahead of him, and he's like trying to break into the Raptors rotation in his third year this year. So it's not like he's necessarily been, you know, a stud from day one as an elite college player. And then guys like Shabazz Napier, John Diebler, Rick Jackson, Jeff Withey, going back through, you know, the database, these are guys that compare to Cindarius, who have all struggled to make it in the NBA. So it's not like him having this great college season means that he's for sure going to be a stud in the NBA, but it is interesting. And, you know, he did better than a lot of guys because he's a senior. Most very good players don't stay until their senior year. But, you know, I mentioned those comps, Napier, Diebler, Jackson, Withey. Two other comps that I noticed were Jay Crowder and Draymond Green. Those guys, along with Cindarius, great ratings in TPA as college seniors, really well-known, gritty defenders, all slipped to the second round, and obviously Crowder has established himself as a quality two-way NBA starter, and Draymond Green is an all-star, you know, all-NBA guy. So if Cindarius, and I'm not saying Cindarius is going to be an all-star, but if Cindarius can follow in that mold, probably more of a Jay Crowder, but just a shooting guard slash small forward Jay Crowder instead of a small forward slash power forward, that would be amazing. But so I thought that was a really interesting find. So, you know, I wrote that up. You can check out the numbers in more detail on ClipStation.com. That post is up there. But I did want to share that with you guys because I thought that was, you know, first of all, interesting, but second of all, just really cool that he could, you know, he can probably legitimately say, I was the best player in NCAA Division I last season. Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, but there's a better, simpler way to buy, with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats. I actually just used SeatGeek this week looking at concert tickets with my roommates. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, my listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code LONBA today. That's promo code LONBA for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Now, in the back half of this episode, I want to talk a little bit about the player previews that we did on Clips Nation this week. You know, for the normal roster players, we aren't starting until next week. But on this week, we just broke down some of the training camp guys who aren't likely to make the team. So I'll explain their situations a little bit, and then I'm going to answer one reader email, and that'll be our episode. So we'll be out of here relatively quick today. So the four guys we talked about on ClipStation this week, Marshall Plumlee, Tyrone Wallace, CJ Williams, DeAndre Liggins. Now, we separated them, Liggins on his own and Plumlee, Wallace, and Williams all lumped together in a group because both in terms of what they are as players and their situation with the Clippers, you know, it's kind of easy to draw that line. So Plumlee, Wallace, and Williams are all young, inexperienced, not really NBA caliber players. They're in training camp. Maybe they'll have a moment or two in the preseason, and then they're going to go either be on a two-way contract or play in the D League this year. DeAndre Liggins is a little more traveled as an NBA veteran. He's played for 8 different teams. He's been a bit player in some spots. He's been, you know, an injury fill-in rotation player. He's a capable defensive wing, but he's not, obviously not a, like, really quality NBA player because he keeps on bouncing around and not really earning rotation minutes anywhere or being able to stick with a team. But it wouldn't shock me that if the Clippers cut him, someone who is in desperate need of a wing because of injuries, maybe New Orleans maybe they would pick him up. So he's a guy who it wouldn't shock me to see in the NBA this season. But that's where I differentiate him between, you know, Plumlee, Wallace, and Williams, all of whom probably aren't going to be in the NBA this season. They might be on a two-way, but that's it. Now, the other reason we separate them is because of contract status. So all four of these guys have non-guaranteed contracts. But what's and the reason why the Clippers have 14 guaranteed contracts, you get to carry 15 players. So you'd think these four would be competing for the last roster spot. But because of the Clippers' luxury tax situation, right now they're about $90,000 underneath the luxury tax. For them to keep one of these guys and make their contract guaranteed, it would push them into luxury tax territory, which doesn't make sense to do for the 15th man on your roster. It just doesn't make sense. So I don't think any of them are going to make the team. But here's the key difference. Liggins, who's the best player of the bunch, is ineligible to be put on a two-way contract because of his NBA experience. You cannot be put on a two-way contract if you have more than 4 years of NBA experience. I think Liggins has like 8. Now, Plumlee, Wallace, and Williams all have between, you know, Plumlee has 1 year of experience. I don't think Wallace or Williams have any NBA experience. So these guys, while they're not likely to make the Clippers 15-man roster, what the Clippers could do if one of them really sticks out in training camp is put them on a two-way contract alongside Jameel Wilson, who presumably has already secured his spot on a two-way deal. So that's basically all you need to know about those four guys. Liggins is the best player of the bunch. He's the one you're most likely to see somewhere else this season and go, oh, why didn't the Clippers keep him? They didn't because of the luxury tax, and he realistically wasn't going to get minutes here anyway. Plumlee, Wallace, and Williams all far less likely to make the team, but they're eligible for two-way deals. The one sort of caveat with Liggins is because he is, you know, a useful player in the NBA, if the Clippers were to, say, have an injury in training camp, they could keep him. Like, let's say Austin Rivers sprains his ankles. The Clippers could keep Liggins as a backup shooting guard for the first week of the season. His contract would be prorated, so they wouldn't have to pay him the whole yearly salary and go over the luxury tax. They would just pay him per day, which, you know, they would be able to do that and still stay underneath the luxury tax threshold. And then the other thing is, if Liggins really impresses, and I think he's the only one of this bunch that has a strong chance to do so, he could potentially make the roster and the Clippers could say, hey, this guy's really good and he's going to help us. We're willing to pay the luxury tax for him. I doubt it, but it is possible. Now, just to finish things up, I'm going to take one quick reader email and then wrap this episode up. So Matthew Chong emails and he asks me, hey, Lucas, I'm wondering what kind of minutes the starters may be getting in preseason games this year, possibly a little more than usual to get them acclimated to each other with so many new faces. Well, I don't think necessarily that preseason minutes matter. I'm not sure that it's an especially important topic, and it's really, really speculative, I think. But, Matthew's not the only person, thinking this or wondering this, and I know everyone is really excited to try to see the new Clippers together as soon as possible, and I think that's fueling, excitement to see the new guys is fueling these queries a little more than, legitimate questioning of preseason strategy. But I think you probably won't see much variance in starter minutes compared to other years. What you might see is a little more of the starters playing together when they do play and then all resting when they don't play. Because in the past, familiarity between Chris Paul, J.J. Redick, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan has never been a problem, but you've been trying to get them familiar with different guys that are being incorporated in the second unit, with the Clippers having a lot of role player turnover year to year. This year, obviously, there's a lot more turnover on the roster from top to bottom. So, I think we'll see chunks with the starters playing together. I think we might even see different combinations in the starting lineup. Austin Rivers and Milos Teodosic seem to be the most likely pair to be competing for that shooting guard spot next to Patrick Beverley, who you would presume is safe for now, but could theoretically be outplayed by those two guys. So it's going to be, it's going to be fun. I think we'll see lots of different combinations. I'm hopeful that Doc Rivers is going to actually stagger his lineups this year, since he's not going to have that dominant starting lineup, where it seemed like his strategy in years past was he knew his starters were so good, he didn't want to dilute that elite lineup. So he left them in for as long as possible and then just tried to tread water when they went out and then put that elite lineup back on the floor. This year, I don't think the Clippers are going to have you know, a lineup like that with Chris Paul and JJ Redick in it that was one of the best lineups in the NBA year in and year out, I think that they're going to have to find a way to be more consistently solid for 48 minutes, and that is going to mean mixing your units a little bit. So we'll probably see interesting combinations. And I think one thing to remember is that even though Doc Rivers probably has an idea of some combinations that he'd like to use this year, he's never seen these guys play together before either. He's only been doing it in his head. And training camp, while it's useful, can only tell you so much until you get into real competition. So I think it'll be really interesting to see, more so than the amount of minutes that the starters play, which I don't think will be especially indicative towards what we'll see during the regular season. I think it'll be interesting to see what combinations of lineups Doc Rivers uses in the preseason, because as he experiments with different groups of guys playing together, that could prove to be a little more indicative of the types of lineups that he'll choose to use during the regular season and then going forward beyond that. So thanks for that question, Matt. If anyone else has any questions they want me to answer, I'm still going to have plenty of time in the next couple of weeks at the end of episodes to answer reader questions. So please tweet at me at Lucas J. Han, email me lhan.clipsnation@gmail.com, as well as if you have any general comments, questions, or feedback about the podcast, again, tweet at me at Lucas J. Han, email me lhan.clipsnation@gmail.com. And thanks for listening, guys. So this, like I said, is our last episode of the off season. Next week, we're officially transitioning into preseason mode. See you then.